Okay, question one. According to the Shulchan Aruch, why should we be proud, right, to wear tzitzis? So the Shulchan Aruch gives, right, that story. He says, if you got a postcard from the president, right, if you got an autographed jersey, right, from your, right, was it Hank Aaron? Who's the best judge? What's his name? I apologize. Aaron Judge. Right? You got an autographed, I'm saying it's something to be proud of, something to show off. So the Shulchan Aruch says that the tzitzis, right, are like an autographed jersey from Hashem, so to speak. Hashem's autograph is coded, right, is written on the tzitzis in code, and so we should be very proud, to wear it and show it off, that Hashem gave us, right, this autographed, memento, of His love for us. So then we said, according to the Shulchan Aruch, how do tzitzis, remind us of Hashem? So the Shulchan Aruch pointed out that if you add up the number of knots and the number of strings, right, you end up, right, with the words Hashem Echad, right, because you've got over here the four knots, right, and then you have, five knots, and eight strings is 13, right, which is the gematria of Echad. What else does he say? Where do you get Hashem's name? I think it's loops, right? If you count up, it's 7 and 8, which is 15. That's a gematria of Yud-Hei. And then you have 11, right, which is 26, which is the gematria of the Yud-Hei and the Vav-Hei. Right? And then the last, set of loops is 13, right, which is Echad. And the total is the gematria of 39, and that's why it's called Talis. Teslamet is 39. He says you basically have that idea that coded, right, into the tzitzis, you have the words Hashem Echad, Hashem is one. The Shulchan Aruch also added that the five gnats symbolize the five books of the Torah, and when we look at the five gnats, we are supposed to remember all of the mitzvot in the Torah, and Hashem who gave us the Torah, and so that's basically another thing that he says. When you look at the tzitzis, there are many, many messages that are coded into the tzitzis. According to the Mishnah Brura, how do tzitzis remind us of Hashem's oneness? So I think he says, if you take the
knots, and you add it with the number of strings.
Well, we did that. Well,
equals 13.
We did that already, but there's something else.
That's all sides. All four sides.
So the Shulchan Aruch, I think, does something with the front two.
Oh, yeah.
He says,
you double it.
If you have eight strings and five gnats on the right, and eight strings and five gnats on the left, so together,
26.
eight plus five plus five is 26, right, which again, right, is Hashem's name. Right, and that's why by Baruch Sha'amar we hold specifically the front two of the tzitzis together, right? Because that way we're sort of reminding ourselves that Hashem should be in the front of our consciousness at all times. So that's a second way. Right? In other words, you've got the loops, right? 7, 8, 11, and 13, which spell out, Hashem Echad. And then you also have the sum of the front knots and the front strings, right, which also spell out in gematria, the four letter name of Hashem is the spell Yud and Hey and Vav and Hey. According to the Chumash, right, what should happen when we see the tzitzis? Uri'isem oso, right? You should see them, and what should happen?
You should remember what happened.
Uzichartem as kol mitzvos Hashem, right? You remember all of Hashem's mitzvos, right? And Rashi explains that the idea is if you take the gematria of the word tzitzis, right, which is 600, and then you add up the eight strings and the five gnats, you end up with 613. That reminds you of the 613 mitzvos. So there you have the tzitzis reminding us of mitzvos. According to the Shulchan Aruch, why did tzitzis have five gnats? Right, that we said a minute ago, to remind us of five. Who knows five? I know five. Five are the books of the Torah. Right, okay, so the point is that, right, if you, all of the 613 mitzvos are contained, right, in the five books of Chumash, so you look at the tzitzis, you see the five gnats, you remember Chamisha Chumshei Torah, and that's how you remember all of the mitzvos. According to the Shulchan Aruch, why are there tzitzis on all four corners of the garment?
Right? Everywhere we look.
Yes, because we should, no matter where we look, we should remember the mitzvos. There should not be a single direction that that we're not reminded of the mitzvos when we look that way. According to the Ramah, why do we kiss the tzitzis during Shema?
Because from Hashem, to show
that we love and appreciate the tzitzis. They're an opportunity, they're a badge of honor, and even if we don't really love and appreciate them, right, you fake it until you make it. If you kiss the tzitzis, you'll eventually come to appreciate them properly, but the idea basically is to show our love for the mitzvah, whether it's love that we already have or love that we want to acquire in the future. The idea is we kiss the tzitzis to show that we love them. According to the Shulchan Aruch, why do we kiss the tzitzis? Not sure why I have those two separate questions. Oh, that's why. Right? The Shulchan Aruch says that during Shema, we say that it's a mitzvah to see the tzitzis and remember their message. And so people have a special custom of looking at the tzitzis. So that way we're not hypocritical. We're not saying, oh, it's a big mitzvah to see the tzitzis and then closing our eyes or looking away and not seeing them. We want to do it at the same time as we say it, because that really just strengthens the message there. So he says, you know, when you say Uri Isim Osoda, it's a mitzvah to see the tzitzis and remember their message, we actually look at the tzitzis and bring them up closer, to our face. And that way, we are being consistent. Our words and our actions are one. What's next? What are two customs that show love for mitzvos? Okay. One of them is...
We lift the tzitzis and put it by our eyes.
Okay, one of them is lifting the tzitzis and putting it by our eyes, and the second one is kissing them, right? And again, the basic idea is, do you love them? Do you not love them? You want to love them eventually, and so you fake it until you make it, if that's where you're holding. What are two reasons for why we should love mitzvos? So one of them was a clam story, right? And how we don't necessarily appreciate the value of mitzvos in this world.
So we run after comfort and pleasure and not pleasure.
Right, but the truth is that the mitzvos are much more valuable, right, than any of the things that we do run after in this world. The problem is that once we appreciate their value, it's going to be too late to get them. It's worthwhile to remind ourselves of that. While we still have the opportunity, and also because if you don't enjoy mitzvos, then they're torture, and you'll probably be doing them for a lot of your life. Why not invest the time to make them enjoyable, and then whenever you do a mitzvah, you'll enjoy it instead of being tortured by it. So it's a worthwhile investment. I think I told the story about my music professor and how somebody came to me and said, "Well, my friends, they like classical music. I don't like it. Please teach me how to like classical music. I want to be like my friends." And the teacher said to him, "Okay, I'll give you a 2-year program, right, to appreciate classical music." He says, "Find the most beautiful spot in your backyard and put out like a beach chair there and have a little table with all of your favorite, drinks." and then get a really good, you know, stereo system, he said, and put it up around that corner of your garden in the beach chair. He said every night you'll spend 1 or 2 hours lying in the beach chair and just, you know, playing classical music. He said at the end of 2 years, you'll enjoy it like all of your friends enjoy it. So there's that similar idea that there are certain things that you don't necessarily enjoy naturally, but they are worth enjoying. And mitzvos are one of those things that we don't necessarily naturally enjoy every single mitzvah, but it is worth, you know, spending some time understanding them better, coming to appreciate them better, because, you know, we'll be doing mitzvos hopefully for our whole life, and we'd much better to do them in an enjoyable frame of mind rather than the opposite. What foundation of Jewish belief do Tefillin remind us of? Yes. Okay, so they remind us, again, there's Jewish belief and Jewish history, right? So the foundation of Jewish belief is Hashem's oneness. How does right, how did Tefillin remind us of that? Because in the Tefillin, as written, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, which means Hashem is one. So when we see the Tefillin, those boxes, we're supposed to remember what's written inside of them, which is Hashem's oneness. The same thing, by the way, for a mezuzah. Anyone know what's written inside of a mezuzah?
Shema.
Shema. Right? And the reason is because when you see the mezuzah, when you kiss the mezuzah, you're supposed to remember what's written inside of it, and that way every room you go in and out of, you remember Hashem's oneness and Hashem's love and all the other things and our commitment, you know, to perform the mitzvos. Every time that we pass a mezuzah and we see it, we're supposed to remember those messages that are written inside the mezuzah. So it's the same thing by tefillin. There are certain messages that are written inside of the tefillin. We're supposed to know what they are. Whenever we see the tefillin or feel them on our head and on our arm, we're supposed to remember what those messages are. So one of the main messages, Hashem, Echad Hashem is one. Right? It has many different meanings, not just that there's no other, no other God, you know, besides Hashem, but also means that Hashem is indivisible, that you can't, you know, cut God into pieces. God is indivisible, and it also means that He is omnipresent. But again, the basic idea is Hashem's oneness. Now we get to what Sammy said, what foundation of Jewish history do Tefillin remind us of?
Mitzrayim.
That's Yitzhak Mitzrayim. How do they remind us of that? Is because...
Because of the
Yeah, exactly. Because Yitzhak Mitzrayim, the story of Yitzhak Mitzrayim is written inside of the Tefillin. So when we see the Tefillin, when we feel the Tefillin, we're supposed to remember what's written inside of them, and that is, Yitzhak Mitzrayim. Why do we put tefillin next to the heart and the brain? Daniel?
When we put it next to the heart, it's to show like our love for it and how it like affects us. And like for the brain, it's like part of like how we think.
No, you can do a good thing for a shot.
It's a good pshat. It's not what the Shulchan Aruch says. It is a good pshat. I'll read you. There's an interesting prayer that some people say before they put on their tefillin. It goes as follows. It says, when I put on the tefillin, I have in mind to fulfill the mitzvah of my Creator, who commanded me to put on tefillin. As it says in the Torah, tie them on your hand and between your eyes. And inside of the tefillin, there's 4 parshas, and they are Shema, V'hayim, Shemoa, Kaddish, and V'hayim, Ki V'yacha. And in those 4 parshas, it talks about Hashem's oneness and a different type of oneness. And it also reminds us of the miracles which Hashem did when He took us out of Egypt. And it reminds us that He has the power and the rulership of the upper worlds and the lower worlds. He can do with them whatever He wants. And He told us to put them on the hand to remember whatever it is. And also opposite the heart to remind us to devote our desires and our thoughts to Hashem and to His mitzvos. And it's on the head, next to the brain, because it's to remind me that the brain and all of the senses and all of the strengths of the brain should be devoted to Hashem's mitzvos. So that seems to be based on the Shulchan Aruch, which I'm not going to read inside, but that's a little prayer that many people say in Hebrew before they put on tefillin. And the idea is that when we put on tefillin, we're supposed to remind ourselves the tefillin is on the head, to remind us to devote our brain and our thoughts to Hashem, and it's next to the heart to remind us that our feelings and our emotions should also be used for mitzvos and for Torah. And that's really the message of tefillin You know, when we put them on every day, we're supposed to remember that. It's a reminder that our heart and our brain is supposed to be devoted to Hashem. They point out, just by way of comparison, by mezuzah, even though this is not on the test, right? But that mezuzah is that same basic idea. We put the mezuzah on the door of our house to remind us to devote what to Hashem? If the tefillin, the head tefillin reminds us to devote our brain to Hashem, the hand tefillin next to the heart reminds us to devote our heart to Hashem, so mezuzah reminds us to devote what to Hashem?
Our hand, our eyes,
our house.
Our house, right, exactly. It's a reminder that the house, you know, should be devoted to Hashem. It's not like, oh, you know, I'm outside, so I'm going to look very frum. When I'm inside the house, I just do what I feel like. The house is also like a mishkan, and the house is also supposed to be devoted, you know, to helping us, you know, serve Hashem. That's obviously different, the way we serve Hashem in the house, you know, from the way that we serve Hashem, you know, on the street. And resting is also a mitzvah if we need the rest in order to learn better and to do mitzvahs better. But we're supposed to remember that just like the brain and the heart are devoted to Hashem, right? The mezuzah reminds us that our house should be devoted to Hashem. What lesson about pleasure do tefillin remind us of?
Spend more time on being part
of Hashem. Right. The point of life is not about pleasure. The reason Hashem gave us a brain is not so that we could figure out, right, how to get the most pleasure out of life. You're the one who asked for this. Mm-hmm. That's why I don't do it in class. Put it away, please. Okay, if anybody has any questions about why I don't usually do review in class, that's the answer. Because it's going to be on the recording, so why should I bother listening? So basically, again, the point is that life is not about pleasure. Life is about, you know, producing, making the world a better place, making ourselves more perfect people, and that's really what the tefillin are supposed to remind us of. The brain and the heart shouldn't be, you know, devoted to running after money or power or any of those other things that you said before, but they really should be devoted towards the pursuit of perfection. What's the concept of hesech hadas?
Removal of concentration?
Removal of concentration or being distracted. And we said there's two different types of hesech hadas, are two reasons to avoid hesech hadas, right? One of them was because tefillin.
First one is jokes, and you can't play a game while we're in
tefillin. So that's the next question, which are four things that you're not allowed to do because we're worried by hesech hadas. But there's two different reasons why. One of them is because when you get distracted, you're not focusing on the message of the tefillin. The tefillin have an important message. You know, just like you wouldn't want to get distracted, you know, from the World Series, you want to like catch every single, you know, play. You know, so the same thing by the tefillin, when they're on you, you really want to be absorbing, you know, every moment of their message, so you don't want to get distracted from that. And then second of all, just because the tefillin are something that, you know, that are holy and deserve respect, we're nervous that if you get distracted, you might forget that you're wearing tefillin and do something that's not respectful, like go into a bathroom with them or pass gas while you're wearing them, right, or something along those lines. And so you're always supposed to be concentrating on wearing tefillin, on wearing tefillin, on wearing tefillin, and not get distracted from them. So that brings us to the four things that are forbidden on account of hesech hadas. Like Sammy said, playing games is not allowed because it's hesech hadas. What were some of the other things?
Making jokes.
Certain types of jokes, right? Lightheaded jokes.
Lying and sleeping.
Maybe neutral jokes. Sleeping is not allowed because when you're right, and that's during davening, not necessarily during tefillin, right? And you know, but sleeping, hysterical crying, playing games, and making jokes. There don't seem to be a dress code, you know, for tefillin. For davening, there's a dress code, but keep in mind that in the olden days, people wore tefillin all day long. You know, so pretty much anything that a person would need to do over the course of a long day, you're probably allowed to do, you know, in your tefillin. For davening, which is only for, you know, a couple of minutes, you can say, okay, you know, put on a tie for davening, put on a jacket for davening, but you can't expect a person who's a fisherman, right, or an exterminator, whatever it is, you know, to be going around dressed, you know, in a suit or tie all day. In the olden days, they wore tefillin all day, so the dress code for tefillin is a little bit more relaxed than the dress code for davening. Ellie?
In the olden days, what do you need in the bathroom? You're not supposed to take it so
you can take it off.
So there were special hooks outside the bathroom where people would hang their tefillin.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a good question. There's a long Gemara in Brachos that deals with exactly what the rules are. Obviously, they didn't have bathrooms back then the way that we had now. So they didn't have walls. And the question of how close and how far and what you're supposed to do with them. What if there aren't hooks available? All these are discussed, in the Gemara in Brachos. And it's a very interesting, page or two of Gemara there. So according to the Mishnah Brura, what are two reasons to touch your tefillin?
Not to
forget the message of tefillin. So number one, to avoid hesech hadas. If you touch the tefillin, so you're reminding yourself, that you're wearing the tefillin, you remember the message, you remember to treat them respectfully,
and to check that it's in the correct place.
In other words, that the head tefillin should be centered, right in the center of the head, directly between the eyes. The hand tefillin should be pointing at your heart, and that the knot of the hand tefillin should be touching the backs of the hand tefillin. Those very often come apart when you put the tefillin away after davening. And really, you get the mitzvah when they're touching one another. So it's important to make sure that, that when you're touching the tefillin, you just should make sure that they're in the right position, and also that, that the neck and the backs are touching each other. According to Rabbi Yaakov Emden, what are three categories of jokes and what are their laws?
Lightheaded jokes.
He said lightheaded jokes you can't tell while you're wearing tefillin.
Wow, like neutral jokes and mitzvah.
Neutral jokes, which he's not sure about, and mitzvah jokes, which he said are allowed. A lightheaded joke is a joke that takes something that you ought to treat seriously and makes you treat it less seriously. A mitzvah joke is a joke that helps you appreciate a mitzvah, and a neutral joke is neither lightheaded nor a mitzvah joke.
Oh, you want me to edit the recording?
So question 21, what are two things that a kippah reminds us of? So we said number one is Yirat Shamayim, and number two is humbleness. Right? We talked a little bit about how it reminds us of each of those things. Wait, are we having questions for the recording?
No, I have a question about
Yirat Shamayim literally means awe of heaven.
Is it fear of heaven?
So the word fear in English is something that we often don't understand properly. Like when we think about fear, we think about like a little kid who's afraid of the thunder, right? Or being afraid of something terrible happening. But when we talk about Yiras Shemayim, in general, we don't refer mainly to being afraid of God punishing us. That's not a high level of doing mitzvos, but rather it's the emotion that we describe as awe, which means that when we're in the presence of something that's much greater than ourselves, right, we sometimes just feel that sense of awe, wow, this is just incredibly impressive. It's something that I wish I could achieve or that I know that I'll never achieve, but I'm privileged, to be in its presence. And so when we talk about Yiras Shamayim, right, there is a low level, which is, God is going to punish me if I do the wrong thing, so I'll do what's right. But really, the main thing that we mean is the higher level, which is, Right, it's a mentality of awe, which is, I'm so inspired, thinking about, who God is, that I want to do the right thing. Not because I'm scared that I'll be punished, but because I'm in awe, of Hashem. Yeah.
When did we do the first morning?
With the last class.
What do you mean with the other class?
Obviously. I'm being recorded now, so everything that you ask, everything I answer is on the recording.
I got it.
Right? And when we're done with the recording, we'll post it.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I didn't realize.
Yeah. Why does your hand on top of your head not count as a kippah? Daniel?
No, I was going to answer, but never mind.
Yeah.
Because it's part of your body. If it's someone else's head, then it's okay. Right?
Yeah, again, the message of the yarmulke is, I'm not the top of the world. There's something on top of me. So if the only thing on top of me is me, then it sort of defeats the message, right? So it's got to be something else on top of me, whether it's a cloth or whether it's somebody else's hand. That's what transmits that message of being humble, is that there's something that's not me, that's on top of me. In the olden days, what five occasions required wearing a kippah? Right, one was
seeing your rabbi
in the presence of a rabbi.
In a shul.
If you're in a shul, base madrash, yeshiva. If you're learning Torah out loud.
I was going to say learning Torah.
If you're saying a bracha, or if you're davening, these are all occasions, right, when we sort of feel Hashem's presence, right, more intensely, and so we put on a yarmulke to remind Hashem that we remember Him and that we are humble and in awe in His presence. Nowadays, why is it a requirement to wear a kippah all the time? Because, Henoch.
It
became an accepted minhag. Jewish people have been doing it for probably around 800 years, wearing a kippah all the time. And when that happens, it's called, you know, direct democracy. The people vote with their feet, and it's as if, you know, this became a law. Since all the Jewish people have been doing it, you know, for hundreds and hundreds of years, it basically has the status of a law, and we have to keep on doing it. You know, because it's as if the entire Jewish people voted and ratified this new law that we should wear a kippah all the time. Moving on from yarmulkes to dress during davening, according to Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, what's the main thing to concentrate on during Shmon Esrei? This might actually be the most important thing that we learn the whole year. What's the main thing to concentrate on during Shmon Esrei, Yoni?
Being in like a meeting with Hashem.
You're in a meeting with Hashem. You're face to face with Hashem. You have a personal one-on-one, you know, audience with Hashem. I like to think back when I was a little kid. So one of my favorite memories was that there was a blizzard and school was canceled. So my father took me with him to work. Now, you know, he worked at the time, right, at the top of a skyscraper, and it was like a whole thing, you know. But really, what was so geschmack, it was just me and my father the whole day. Like, he was working, but like, you know, it was, you know, he was there. So there's something to it when you're in like a personal, just one-on-one. And so Shmon Esrei is also that type. It's a meeting with Hashem, you know, not just a transactional, you know, meeting, but it's supposed to be something that we relish and appreciate. So relish. Like, enjoy.
Oh, like the vegetable?
Cherish?
Cherish, yeah.
Yeah, cherish.
No, the way that you would enjoy, right, just having your father or your mother's undivided attention.
Yeah, cherish.
Okay, that's how we're supposed to enjoy having Hashem's undivided attention during Shmon Esrei.
Relish is just a hot dog topping.
Yeah, cherish.
It's also a synonym for enjoy.
Is it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. See, he ate it with relish. Means that he clearly enjoyed eating.
Oh yeah, you're right. It's both. It's
you
both.
You could do it with relish, and you put relish.
Yes. That's why he did it like that. Yeah, great enjoyment and food.
What are three ways of dressing that the Shulchan Aruch says not to dress during davening, Yoni?
Open-toed shoes. You should wear shorts, and then I do not remember the third one.
So he says, don't wear shorts. And he says,
don't wear
an apunda, right? Which is most, you know, best nowadays is a backpack. In other words, you know, sometimes people, right, at Ma'ariv, there's such a rush to leave that they put on their backpack at the beginning of Ma'ariv. But the truth is that they're not allowed to daven Shmon Esrei wearing a backpack. You wouldn't show up to a business meeting, right, with a backpack on your shoulders, like as if to say, I can't wait to get out of here. You wouldn't show up on a date, right, wearing a backpack on your shoulders and say, I can't wait to get out of here. So you don't show up to, you know, that meeting with God, right, with a backpack on your shoulders. So even if you put it on at the beginning of Meir, you'd have to take it off for Shmon Esrei. No shorts, no backpacks, and he says no bare head. You have to cover your head, which again, some people say means to wear a kippah, but other people say you're wearing a kippah already. Right? All day long, it might mean a second, you know, head covering, right? Whether that's, you know, the double layer of the kippah. Some people interpret that as meaning a hat, and some people put their talus over their head for Shmon Esrei, but all of that is based on the second interpretation of the Shulchan Aruch, right, who says that you need to have your head covered for Shmon Esrei.
What about shoes? I thought it said that you have to cover your feet.
He talks about something called batei raglayim, which are houses for the feet. So what exactly does that refer to in Hebrew? Batei yadayim would be the older Hebrew word for gloves, houses for the hands. Right, so batei raglayim, I think we usually interpret as being, you know, the pant legs, not so much shoes.
Even if the pant legs don't cover your feet?
Even if they don't cover like your toes, and you know, I think that I think is referring to pant legs.
Okay.
Yeah.
Would socks count?
Socks and shorts?
No, just socks that aren't any shoes.
So there's a separate issue about davening barefoot. I think that Avilim, you know, daven barefoot, and so you know, a lot of my grandparents' friends. I remember I was one time davening mincha at my grandparents' house when I was very young. And like one of their friends came and said, oh, he's davening without shoes on. Only mourners daven without their shoes on. So they were worried about it for that reason. You know, the question is, when you go to a business meeting with your socks, it was always one of my nightmares when I was a kid, is that I would, you know, show up at school and have forgotten to put on shoes.
Oh no, I accidentally went to school without shoes.
So I'm not sure that we would feel comfortable.
At least you don't have to worry about mismatching them.
Right. I'm not sure that one would feel comfortable, you know, being someplace, you know, where appearances matter and not having shoes on. So that might be another reason why to wear shoes, you know, during davening. But I don't think that that's, you know, what the Shulchan Aruch is talking about. Again, I think he's talking about pants. In terms of socks, I know that Chassidim, certain types of Chassidim at least, actually don't wear pants. They just have the long, long bekesha that goes all the way to their ankles. And then they have long white socks that go right, all the way to their waist. And so that, I think, would count in place of pants as well. Not Lubavitch Hasidim, but other groups of Hasidim.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. So I would think that would count as well because their legs are covered. Yeah.
How come I also sometimes see like some people don't with like a rope around their waist?
Oh, that's a
gartel. Yeah. There. I mean, that's a separate thing which I can talk about when I'm not being recorded. But it has to do with the separating the heart from the lower parts, you know, of the body. And nowadays, many people don't do it because they have elastic underwear. They have you know, belt like this. But in the olden days, when people just wore like loose robes, it was very important that there be some sort of a you know tight you know something you know separating their heart from the rest of their body. So according to the Shulchan Aruch, when is it forbidden to wear shorts during davening and why? So he says that if you wouldn't show up to a business meeting in your culture wearing shorts, then you also can't show up to davening wearing shorts because davening is like a personal meeting, right? One-on-one business meeting with Hashem. Right? But the Shulchan Aruch says, when is it allowed to wear shorts if in your culture, right, that's something that's done, that you would show up to an important meeting or in a meeting with an important person wearing shorts, so then you could also do that for davening. It's not considered disrespectful because if you show up that way for an important meeting, you can also show up that way for a meeting with Hashem. According to Rabbi Ovadia Yosef, why is a chazan allowed to wear short sleeves during davening?
Well, if he gets hot,
again, it's all everything builds on. Okay, so in other words, Rav Avadia Yosef says that nowadays you would show up for a meeting, right, with a member of the legislature, with a chaver knesset, with a congressman. You would be fine. You would be comfortable showing up in short sleeves. He says if you would meet that way with a congressperson, you can also meet that way with God. But Rav Avadia Hadaya said no, chazan can't wear short sleeves. You can't compare a meeting, right, with a chaver knesset to a meeting with Hashem, and he says, why? Because the Chaver Knesset needs your vote to get reelected. And so it's not that he's the boss of you, right? Maybe the opposite is true. You are his boss, right? As opposed to God, who is absolute. He doesn't need you for anything. So it says maybe the better example would be if you were living in an absolute dictatorship, right, where literally the important person had power over you, but you had nothing over them, then would you wear short sleeves? And that's what Rabbi Ovadia Hadaya sees as the litmus test for whether it's allowed to wear a certain attire during davening or not. Avicha, you had a question?
No.
Okay. What day of Sukkot do we start to see Morid HaGeshem in Atta Gibor?
Last day.
That would be Shmini Atzeres, right? In Israel, that's the last, but in America, it's not the last. It's the second to last day. And according to Nusach Ashkenaz, what time of day do we start? Akiva?
Is it Nusach?
But what part of Musaf? Yeah, for Ashkenazim, Nusach Ashkenaz, it's the Chazaras Hashatz of Musaf. So the Chazan is the only one who says Mamur Ageshem, right, during Musaf, and everyone else who's not a Chazan would only start at Mincha time. However, for Nusach Sfard, what time of day, right, does everybody start saying Mamur Ageshem for Nusach Sfard?
Regular
Musaf, exactly. It has to do with the question about how you announce it. You're supposed to announce Morad Hageshem, Nusach Sfard will generally give a bang on the bima, right? And someone will announce Morad Hageshem before Musaf. Nusach Ashkenaz prefers not to do that, and so they take the Chazan saying it in Chazar Sashatz as the announcement, and the people can only start saying Morad Hageshem after it's been announced, and they'll start at Mincha time. So that's a machlokas between Nusach Sfard and Nusach Ashkenaz. According to Nusach Ashkenaz, what should you do if you forgot to say Morid Hageshem? You said, and you forgot to say Mashiv Ruach Morid Hageshem. CJ? For Nusach Sfard, you would continue on. For Nusach Ashkenaz, you would have to go back, right, either to that part of the bracha, or if you finish the bracha, you'd have to go back to the beginning of Shmon Esrei. And the reason for that is because Nusach Ashkenaz basically doesn't say anything there, right, during the summer. So to say nothing there is really, earth-shattering, frightening, it's like a really big mess up. You know, everybody else, is standing there, clapping for the Grand Slam, and you somehow missed it, you were spacing out, and you're like, oh my God, like, I just feel so embarrassed, I wish I could do that over. Right, as opposed to Nusach Sfard do say Morid Hatol during the summer. If they forgot Morid Hageshem, then at the minimum, at least they said Morid Hatol. And so it's not like you totally missed it; you participated, just perhaps with not as much excitement and enthusiasm as you should have. But it's not such a big, embarrassment. And so therefore Nusach Sfard will not go back. If you don't remember whether you said Morid Hageshem or not, when should you go back? Yeah.
In the first 30 days after you would normally start saying it, you go back because you're in the habit of not saying it.
Yeah, within the first 30 days, if you don't remember whether you said it or not, you should assume that you didn't say it because we're creatures of habit. And so, if we're in the habit of not saying it, we probably didn't say it. Once 30 days have passed, you've got already 90, 100 prayers where you said Mashiv Ruach Morid Hageshem, so that changed your habit. Now you can assume that you are in the habit of saying it, and so after 30 days have passed, you can assume, if you don't remember whether you said it or not, you can assume that you did say it. Sometimes people come and ask me, Rabbi, I don't remember, did I say it, did I not say it? I got this question sometimes very often. There are other rules as well. But that's a basic rule. Within 30 days, assume that you didn't say it. After 30 days, assume that you did say it. And finally, what day do we start to say the same Talu Matar in Barei Chaleinu? That day is
the equinox.
Not the equinox. It's related to the equinox.
December 5th, right?
December 4th or 5th.
December 4th, 5th, and a leap year. And again, it's going to change in a few dozen years. It's going to end up being a day. A day later or earlier.
So what day is it right
you
now?
You said later, five or
a day later,
six.
Right, but again, it's supposed to be 60 days after the equinox. But the equinox was calculated differently in the olden days, and so it ends up being more than 60 days after the equinox, based on how we calculate it. The equinox is a day when daytime and nighttime are equal length. So in other words, where there's 12 hours of daylight and 12 hours of darkness, precisely. There's two of them in the year, the spring equinox and the fall equinox. And again, if you just count around 70-something days before December 4th, that'll get you to the equinox.
Equinox also happens like once a